It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadani.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. I'm Rob Commodore. I'm your host. I'm also the author of the book, Better Than You Think. And today, I have a special guest and good friend on my podcast by the name of Brian White. How you doing, Brian?
Good. And you, Rob?
I'm doing great. Brian's coming to us out of South Carolina. He left me a few years ago. I was a little irritated by that, but we still happen to remain friends, and that's okay. So anyway, Brian and I met, Brian, was about 7 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, at least.
Years ago. Yeah, and what happened was my son started dating his daughter, and I was dropping him off. I was dropping my son off at their house, and he would drop his daughter off at our house and getting along. And I would pick him up, and it's this big, he thought he was some big stud or something. He's about 6'3", 225. And, you know, he comes to the door, you know, thinking he's the guy. And I'm like, I better watch what I say to this guy. My son's dating his daughter, and I don't want us to get in any trouble. So anyway, when I come to find out, he's this big guy, but he's also got a big heart. So he's supposed to say thank you, Rob.
Well, I was going to defend myself in the first part. I do have a big heart, but I did want, you know, it's my daughter. So you don't want to welcome strangers into the house. You know, you want them to be afraid of you. And that's what my goal was.
I don't know if somebody was going to say something wrong. I was more worried about you beating my son up or beating me up or both of us at the same time. So anyway, what was interesting about that was that I think both our kids wanted us as parents to become friends as well. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
And over time, we've become very good friends. And unfortunately, they're no longer dating.
They were teenagers in high school, but yes.
A teenage love
thing. And now they're college graduates and going on to the next phase of their lives.
And that's what this journey's all about, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Brian's got a pretty cool story. As a young guy, he became a father at a very early age, age 20, as a matter of fact. He's got four children. But early on, he was, I think, working in the state lottery system, if you will. Is that right?
Well, that was after my son was born. But yeah, that was my first job.
Yeah.
That was after he was born.
And struggling, I'll use the word struggling or challenged financially, so to speak.
That's a friendly description.
You feel free to share a little more about that.
I was 19 years old. I got this beautiful woman pregnant. I had no job. I was doing typical college things, and I was given an ultimatum. And this woman who I'm still married to 27 years later now said, you know, I'm going to have this kid and you're welcome to be a part of this kid's life, or, you know, being a 19-year-old, you know, immature person and with no future, or at least no future by my own definition, you can go not be part of it. And I won't hold you responsible. And I'll never forget that conversation. I'll never forget that decision, because it did, it sparked something inside of me, man. It stuck with me, still sticks with me today.
And Bryce, I can empathize with that, because I became a dad at an early age, and it was scary for me. Was it a scary time for you? So you never remember, you always remember the conversation. Was it a scary time for you?
You know, it was scary, but I was a teenager. And so you remember, well, you're a lot older than me, so you maybe don't remember. But when you're that age, you kind of get wrapped up in the thinking, and it isn't always logical. It isn't always balanced. It isn't only always what it's supposed to be. So, yeah, when the reality set in and I made a decision, it was terrifying, terrifying. Rob, I was destined in my own mind to, you know, stay local, go to the local pub, you know, work and get minimum wage salaries. And, you know, there was no there was no expectation around me, near me, with me, by me, or whatever. The expectation was he's going to stay local and do these things. And then this event happened, which you would think would make that reality, make that situation closer to reality than anything. It didn't. It made that a wake-up moment for me that says, all right, what's next for you? And how can you take care of this woman? And how can you take care of this kid coming into your life? Despite the fact I didn't have a college degree, despite the fact that I didn't have any work, all those things measured up to say what I originally started out thinking I was going to do was going to happen. I was going to be, you know, a local schmo. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But I wasn't going to, you know, be a professional. I wasn't going to have this career that I was able to have. And that's why I never forget these things. It was a moment in my life that just made me make a decision that I haven't regretted since.
So in saying that, Brian, for everyone out there listening, Brian became one of the youngest, if not the youngest, president of a hospital, correct, at age 29, correct?
Yeah, close enough.
and that just doesn't happen out there in today's day and age. So Brian had that, and that was, gosh, just what, 9-10 years after the event. So what took you down that trajectory of, okay, I want to be CEO, I want to be a president? What took you down that road?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm a competitive person, you know that. Whether it's, you know, competing with the GPS that I can literally beat how fast the GPS says I can get there. Oh, competing, I'm just wired that way. So when I made the decision that I'm going to prove everybody wrong, don't ask me why that was my decision, but I'm going to prove everybody wrong, and I'm going to take care of my wife, and I'm going to create a family that they're going to be proud to be part of. It just sparked me, man. It just sparked me. So I got into GTEC, as you mentioned. I'll never forget
GTEC, Brian. Which GTEC?
GTEC is the world's largest lottery organization.
Okay.
So they run all the state and national lotteries. But I'll never forget this. So I just had a baby. I just turned 20 years old. I just dropped out of college. If they went back and looked at my high school grades, which they didn't, obviously, it would not help me in any way, shape, or form.
And all along, I thought you were a smart guy.
No. I'm a people person. But I got this job, and I'll never forget it. I had to be 20 years younger than the second youngest person. And Rob, I'll tell you the funniest part of that, and I probably shouldn't tell you this, but going out after work at that age with those folks, they would go out to a restaurant, have a drink. And here I am sweating because I'm underage. But, you know, I got in there and I just started to, not at that point in my life, I just started to say, okay, here's an opportunity. And I'm going to work my butt off and I'm going to try to make the place better. And that became my mentality about just trying to make the organization better and make people who are part of it feel that they're part of it. And GTEC, while it was very early on in my career and I wasn't in a role of influence or anything like that, it just got me thinking, maybe I can do this. And here's the reason I thought that. I'll never forget this. So, you know, I'm a New Jersey guy and sometimes I behave like a New Jersey guy. But
you got that tough guy syndrome.
I got the syndrome that you tell everybody you're from New Jersey. But I'll never forget. So I was working in Queens, New York, and there was a job open within GTEC in Syracuse, New York. Again, I'm 20 years old. I just got this woman I barely knew pregnant or had a baby with her. And I get this opportunity to go to Syracuse, New York, which I didn't care. It could have been across the world. It didn't matter to me. I wanted to create a life for my family. So the funny part is, still in the state of New York, but the Syracuse folks did, the director of Syracuse Lottery, which is an appointed position, did not want anybody from downstate to come up to upstate New York, to central New York. They did not want anybody. They wanted locals, people from Manhattan and New Jersey and Queens, cannot associate with Syracuse people. And that was my introduction in, that they were very clear. They didn't want me there. Well, Rob, up until Bill, his first name was Bill, died 5 years ago, I was invited back to their holiday parties for decades. I only worked there for 3 years. And I love, my point to it is, I just love getting connected with folks. I love doing that stuff. So that was the focus of my career. How do you make an organization better? And how do you motivate people and inspire people to join forces with you? But Bill was my lesson. I learned that it's not about how smart you are. It's not about how creative you are. It's not about your intelligence level. It's about what type of person you are. And by the way, if you're that type of person that cares about others and you have those other attributes, there's no limits. And so I learned that very early on in GTEC, and I never stopped applying it. Over years, I had to modify it because that competitive side of me sometimes became overwhelming. Honestly, I had coaches for it and critics for it and supporters for it. But it is the foundation of what I built my career on, is make the organization stronger and be a people person.
Well, we're going to get into that, but first I got to address something that you and I both share in common, because it's funny you said something, and I shared this with a group of people 2 weeks ago, and people thought I was crazy. So you made the comment, and I love this. You said, I'm the guy that competes with the GPS to see if I could beat my last time. You know what that's called, Brian? It's called hurry up sickness. I don't know if you ever heard that terminology, but
no.
We went to this seminar, and the guy was talking about hurry up sickness. And there was a survey that we had to take. And if you answered all these questions, if you were on a high side five or higher, you know, it said, okay, you have it. And I was sharing with everybody at the table. I'm like, I'm the guy, I know, I don't need my GPS to know where I'm going to certain places. I just want to see if I can get there faster than the last time.
I'm hard that way too. And honestly, I know it's bad, man. I know where you're going with this, but I love it. I love it.
So let's go there. Where does that competitive spirit come from? Any idea?
I've always been that way since my youth. I've always, honestly, as a teammate, I always, and obviously don't ask my teammates in case they disagree. As a teammate, I always wanted to be part of a team. As an opponent, I always wanted to kill you. I just did. I wanted to win. On and off the field, I had friends with opponents. On the field, they did not want to compete with me because I wanted to win. And I'm not saying that's the right thing. That's just how I was. It's how I am wired. Here's a great story. I'm 47 years old now.
Wow, so that old? I didn't know you were that old.
Much younger than you. So at 47 years old, a buddy of mine is up, and we always competed together. We always played together, and we literally played one-on-one basketball. Literally. I'm 47. He's 48. I beat him so badly, but you know what I remembered? Know what I got pissed about? He scored more points than I wanted him to score. And he's like, Brian, you know, we're not in the league. And he scored 1 point, by the way. And he's like, I scored 1 point. I said, I wanted to shut you out. You beat me. We had a lot of games. You beat me and you're mad. I said, no, I'm not mad at myself. I'm mad at letting you score a point. So I'm exaggerating a little bit. But that's just how I'm wired. I don't, everything in my sight is, where is it now? Where does it need to go? How can I get it there? And that's a competitive spirit to me.
Well, and that's probably essentially.
Sometimes it's bad. Sometimes it's bad.
Well, any positive trait overused can be bad. We know that. So that probably or essentially led you to your path in the healthcare field, where you've became a president at a very young age of a hospital. Would you agree with that statement?
I agree with this statement that I made relative to my Syracuse piece, which is focus on how to make it better and focus on culture. The focus on how to make it better incorporates competitive spirit for sure. And again, I've had some great coaches, mentors in my life that have taught me that my intensity about winning is sometimes misperceived, and this happened to me literally, that people, I turn around and no one wanted to be with me. The leaders and the people who wanted success to happen, I'd get rewarded. But the people who are part of the ride jumped off because intimidating is not the right word, but I didn't make them feel special. I made them feel like whatever I made them feel like. And I learned that really early in my career, my first healthcare experience. I learned that honestly, that it's not just about an individual contribution. It's about teamwork. It's about, like I said, motivating folks. If you were in my office right now, you'd see my quotes all over the place. There's nothing about individualism on anything. It's all about people, team. You know, I got John Quincy Adams up here is one of my favorite quotes. If your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you are a leader. I believe in that stuff, man. But the competitive spirit I had early on was sometimes not healthy.
And I understand that. I certainly understand that. Going back to your quotes real quick, I know one of your other favorite quotes is the Jim Valvano piece.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up. And it, just a side note, everybody, I sold Brian's house a couple of years ago, and his house was like perfectly meticulously set up. And he's got this home office, and you know, we're really good friends. And I was there, I had all the pictures taken, and I was going to mess with him and steal that piece that he had sitting on his home office desk. And I wanted to see how he was going to react. But as he told you, sometimes he's very competitive and aggressive. I was afraid that if he found that missing, that he was going to blame me anyway. And I don't know what would have happened to me.
Well, despite your story, I made every one of my kids watch that ESPY Award speech when they turned 13. Everyone. And I'll never forget, my youngest son is now 25. Said, "Dad, I'm not watching this crap," is what he said to me. "Just because you like it doesn't mean anything." I said, "It's not about me liking it. I want you to understand." And I tell them the story behind Jimmy Valvano. And I tell them, I lead them up to the point of where the speech starts. And I said, "I want you to understand where this person was, where they are, what type of person, and listen to this." Mm-hmm. Listen to this. And every one of my kids still watch it today. But this Brady, he literally got so moved, and he was a teenager working, mowing lawns. All of his money went to donation to the Jimmy V Classic for years and years and years and years. That to me, Jimmy V was long gone, long gone. The fact that he can move people in his absence like that and is amazing to me, and it motivates the heck out of me. It really does.
And that's the legacy he's left behind, correct?
That's the legacy he left behind. You know, I'm gonna die from cancer, but maybe I can help you, maybe I can save you, maybe we can do this. Don't give up, don't ever give up. And I watch it every, I know exactly every word he's gonna say, and I still tear up.
Wait, say that again. You're still what?
I'm not repeating that.
He said he still tears up.
I do. It's just so, honestly, all kidding aside, so I have so many Jimmy V quotes all over my office. I love it.
Yeah, one of my favorites when he says, "If you can think, laugh, and cry every day, you've had a good day."
You've had a good day. Yeah. Well, you cry a lot. I don't know if you think. I laugh at you. So maybe if we combine them all together, we satisfy Jimmy V's request.
Well, that makes us twins. I know you're 6'3", 225, and I'm 5'8", 180. So it makes us, we're not identical, but we're twins anyway, right? So Brian, let's get back on the track a little bit here. And not that we went off track, because this all goes to where it's going to go, and it goes where it's supposed to go. But I love the fact that you said there, because we're going to get to your career, but the kids, like you told your kids just to watch this stuff, watch it. And no one's made them do it, but the encouragement and influence you had on them just to watch it, then they had to make their own decision to say, "Hey, I'm interested in this or I'm not interested in it." And I know your kids, and I know mm-hmm. Brian's got four really good kids, where they're adults now. But would you agree that, I guess, more is caught than taught, number one, and two, that you let these kids or these teenagers make up their own mind and let them decide for themselves what's going to work for them, what's not?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. My objective is obviously to help them, inspire them, motivate them. But at the end of the day, they pursue the path they want to pursue and go. There's never a downside. You know, failure is just a moment in time, right? And it's a lesson to be learned, and then you go there. So I wanted all my kids to, you know, do those types of things. I still do. They tell me at this point they're 27, 25, 22, and 19. I'm like, "All right, Dad, we've heard it for years." They don't say it this way, but this is how I interpret it. "Can you shut up?"
You know? but it's all good. But so let's fast forward, right? So they, like, you've instilled that in your kids because you have it in yourself. And we were talking earlier about that early age being the president of the hospital. So you've had some, that I know of, pretty high level jobs, whether it was the president of the hospital, you were the number two guy at LifeBridge, is that correct? Mm-hmm. Which is a huge healthcare system, 8,000 employees, I think you more led. It was more than that? Mm-hmm. So a large amount, let's just say that. And then you went on to a couple other hospitals or systems.
Well, I ran the East Coast for Bon Secours Mercy Health. So I ran everything, you know, up and down the East Coast, 27,000 people, $4 billion.
So you had some pretty hefty titles. And forgive me if I say this the wrong way, were you chasing the title, chasing that role, or was it something else behind that?
You know, yes, kind of. Okay. Going back to the beginning of the story, I wanted to prove everybody wrong. And whether that made sense or not wasn't relevant to me at that point in my life. I wanted to beat the odds. I wanted to prove everybody wrong. So that's the, I don't know if you call it good aspect of it. The bad aspect of it is I could never stop and absorb. I was always, every appointment I ever earned, and I don't want to make this sound the wrong way. I've earned a lot of opportunities. Every single one I've always earned or given the opportunity to take, literally 2 weeks in, I'm like, all right, what's next? Marlene used to turn around and say, Brian, stop and smell the roses. Stop. You're putting so much pressure on yourself. You have enough pressure. Stop. And I never could do that. I never could do that, Rob. I was always, all right, I got appointed as president of this hospital. All right, what's the next step? All right, I got appointed to this role. What's the next step? And I swear, from point A to point B, from B to C, it was a moment in time, because I could never stop and say, wow, this is really cool. Wow, this is, I'd always stop and say, what's next? And that put a lot of stress on me, Rob. It did. It put a lot of stress and pressure on me, and more so than, regardless of the role I played, more so than I should have, to be honest with you.
Well, it's interesting, Brian, because I'm just from this, these few minutes here, I'm learning some things about you that I didn't know that we do have in common. And that's the next step then. We're definitely not height. Anyway, and looks, you know, I know that. But yeah, anyway.
Character, personality, go ahead.
So as you can see, everybody listening, we do know each other pretty well. We can bust each other's chops here in the process. But the idea of the next step, or what's next thing, what it removes from ourselves is the opportunity to, one, like your wife said, smell the roses, but two, celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Nope, never did.
What is it about celebrating that you struggle with?
Well, I think the thing that I struggled with was me celebrating was saying I'm good in the place I'm in and I'm done. So add that competitive spirit, add those doubters, and add that environment that I described that sparked me. It doesn't mesh well with stopping and smelling the roses. It only says, all right, I've hit this mile marker. I've hit this mile marker. I've hit this. I'm not done with the next one. So that's just what it was.
So does the word done, does it equate contentment to you?
No, and here's why, and the people, including you, to know me, my definition of the end point was never defined, because I'm not wired that way. So obviously I was appointed, I'm sure we'll get into, as a health system CEO, when I was 44, 45 years old. And I know I was spoken to, said, all right, you got there, chill. I said, got there, what are you talking about? And they're like, you're at 44, 45 years old, you're going to run a health system, you're the CEO, you got appointed. Yeah, all right. But where's there in your mind? Where you wanted to get? I said, all right, well, I wanted to get here. Nobody said this was my end destination, though. And that's just, again, that was how I was wired. And there's pros and cons, I get it. But the cons sometimes are overwhelming. And the cons were forced by myself. They really were.
I understand that. I really understand myself.
And the pressure I honestly feel like I put on my poor family, because I've moved them so many times, Rob. I moved them because there was this calling I was supposed to be. I was certain of it. I'm supposed to be moving to the next level. I'm supposed to be doing this. Regardless of where we live, that's what we're supposed to be following. My poor kids have lived in so many houses, so many places. And my wife, who's a saint, has been there, you know, with me the whole time. But I never stopped to think about that transition, because you know what happened the second we moved into the next house? I jumped into work. I got going. Boom, boom, boom. What's next?
Yeah.
If I was smart, I would have started a moving company and sold it to myself as a client, you know, because I moved so many times. But that was my mentality. I didn't see the stress of the social stress. I didn't see the moving stress. I didn't see the economic stress. I didn't see any of that ever. I saw next step.
There, yeah, and I get that. Two things here. So because we're going to get into the fact where you said the end is never defined, and we know that it almost was, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. The other piece, I think, you know, I'll keep using the word chasing the title, chasing that next step thing. There was a time, and I'm going to bring this up, where my son was dating your daughter, and we came over to your house for a picnic, if you remember, a cookout. And you had agreed to take a job in Maine, if I remember.
Oh, yeah, correctly. Yeah.
And
that's a great memory.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, everybody else, but yeah, you were there too.
By the way, he paid me a compliment. That doesn't happen often, people.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm instantly pulled back.
So
I forgot about that story for the time being, but as you triggered my memory,
yes,
it was different for me.
It was so, because to me, I think that a light bulb just went off for me with that memory of that story, because maybe that's where things started to change for you, because he had agreed to take a job in Maine, and we had that cookout. And I know Marley was very upset that you were leaving, because her and Robbie were connecting at a stronger level. Yeah. And whether she laid the Catholic guilt trip on you.
No, or honestly, and it wasn't just Marley. That night hit me. I can't believe I remember it so clearly. That so I told you that I was, man, I don't even think I was 40 yet.
No, I think you were 39, actually. I do.
Yeah, and I was appointed. I was given a contract, an offer to be a CEO for a health system. And I'll never forget, Robin, I'm not going to go into the details, but I negotiated a mega deal. I just did. To the point that, and honestly, I think this was in the back of my mind, I'm gonna make this ridiculous request so they tell me no.
Mm-hmm.
And then problem solved. I like them, they like me, but we couldn't reach a deal. And I'll never forget this. So the night you came, which was Friday, I'll never forget this. I was on the phone with the firm representing the health system, and they said, Brian, that's way out of what we were going to do. I said, look, I understand it, but that's just, what it's going to take. So they called a special board meeting, and they approved every single request that I asked for, every single one. I get the call back, say, deal done. Okay. So that's, call it 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock Friday night, whatever it was. The soccer team shows up, and we're having this cookout. I met with my kids before the team showed up, and they were, some didn't care, some did, blah, 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 blah. But then I'm sitting there and the whole night, and I'm watching, meaning the whole night of the party, I'm watching the interactions with all the, not only kids, but the parents, with me and, you. but I'm watching all that, and it's hitting me. It's hitting me that this is more than a job. This is about more than a job. It's about this kind of stuff, man. We're a family beyond just who we gave birth to and who we're married to. And it just hit me. Rob, I didn't sleep that entire night. And I'll never forget this. So I'm up. I went into Marley's room at 3 o'clock in the morning. And, she was still upset. And I could not sleep. Marlene went to yoga that Saturday morning at like 6:30 in the morning. And I woke up. I was up. And I said, I am withdrawing from this job. I am not meant to go there. This is about my friends and my family. We're staying here. I called and left a message. I shouldn't have. At 7:30 in the morning on a Saturday for this firm to call me back. They call me back thinking I'm telling them I signed the contract when I withdrew. Well, needless to say, they still do not call me today to talk about opportunity. But the impact that had between friends, family, and the relationships and the moments that we were having, it just blew my mind. And it was different for me, for sure, because normally I'm like, all right, I'll meet new people. I'll do this. I'll build friendships there. But that one just sunk deep with me.
And it was an emotional moment for you, wasn't it?
Super emotional.
And then you said you called him at 7:30 that morning?
I called her at 7:30.
Yeah. Her, I'm sorry. Yeah. And then I think about 8:30, I got a call.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a call.
I got a call. He's like, Rob, I need help. I need you to help me find a house. So actually, I mean, that's when we started to connect. That's when we really started.
Oh, so when you made money off of me as a broker, we started to connect.
No, actually, everybody, is when I had to show them 50,000 houses, and I had a file that was about 4 inches thick of listings that we showed each other. But anyway, it was really a great experience, and we bonded. I fully believe we bonded. But aside from the real estate piece of it, I really think in hindsight now, Brian, looking back from in our relationship over the last 7-8 years, I could, maybe that's the point where things started to change to, because if I could go fast forward here, that there was a time two, 3 years ago was that you said that that end is never defined. It almost got defined and you got sick, right?
Yep. 2 years ago, right around this time.
And when you almost.
I almost died.
And we had conversations.
And I'm still suspicious that you injected some poison in my food and you just won't own up to it.
It was one from all the referrals he's given me over the years, everybody. I send him a frozen pie here and there, a homemade pie that I would freeze and send it. And I might have put something in there. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, anyway. I'll tell you the story if you want me to share it.
Yeah, please.
It was a fluke, and it has sent a very powerful message to me. So I'll never forget, we're in my office in Maryland, and I've got some of my team with me. We're talking about a pretty big deal. And I'm drinking coffee as my typical way and doing these types of things. And I started to feel really funky, really funky. And I'm literally in our strategy room, in our offices. So I'm not like I'm home doing, I'm literally at work. And I said, okay, let's take a 10-minute break, get coffee, use the restroom. And I never came back. I got rushed to the hospital. My CMO, who still jokes around with me today, that I was the only reason he called the hospital, the ambulance, is because I was blocking access to the urinal, according to him. Got rushed to the hospital. The hospital, obviously, this is at the beginning height of COVID. The hospital that they rushed me to was not a hospital I'd ever been associated with. They call Marlene. They say his body's failing. Things are failing. We have no idea what's going to happen. And there's a chance he's not going to stay with us.
Wow.
Marlene, who is such a passionate, great mom, great wife, great person, called some people that had worked for me that were very close to me and asked for help. And this one individual in particular dropped everything, got involved, and had me transported to Sinai Hospital, which I used to, was part of LifeBridge.
Yeah.
I got transported to Sinai. They took care of me. I was in the hospital for a little while. I got sent home. But the sending home piece, honestly, was just the beginning. What I had to do, I had things going on in my body that I had to overcome. And I had to overcome them. And the one thing I'll tell you that's the funniest thing to this day, the doctors at LifeBridge who knew me, and I knew many of them, I have great relationships still today. The doctors who knew me said, Brian, you're probably going to be the worst patient we've ever had, especially with what you're dealing with. And I said, what are you talking about? We're friends. I'm going to do everything. He goes, Brian, there's nothing that we can do for you. I said, what? The only thing that's going to help you is patience, understanding, and just knowing that this happened to you, that your body's going to have to recover. It could take forever. It could never happen. It could take, you know, a year. It could take whatever. But the one thing you have no ability, no influence, you can't control it. There's nothing you can make sure you're eating healthy. You can make sure you're exercising. You make sure you're doing this or that, not doing this, that. But you are out of complete control, meaning you have no influence and no ability to control your destiny here. And think about everything I just told you about myself. I want to win. So my response to them was, what is the fastest recovery time in the history of the world on this? They're like, what? What is the fastest? They said, you think that's measured? I said, find out. I will beat it. And they said, this is our concern for you. And honestly, Rob, I took it the wrong way. Not their message, but I was so focused when I started getting better. And I was conscious of it because for a while I wasn't even conscious of it. But when I started conscious, I said, I'm going to beat this thing. I'm going to set the record. And I pushed myself in ways that were counterproductive. Everybody knew me. We're saying, right, chill. Many came up to me and said, you know, God is sending you a message. Listen to it. Don't ignore it. Listen to it. My wife's insisting that the message was to take a different perspective, enjoy life, enjoy the things, be proud of what you've accomplished and be proud of what you're proud of. But that's not your definition. And it was really, really interesting because, Rob, I rejected that. I rejected it. And I had a couple relapses because I rejected it and I was not letting my body recover. I was doing things from a health perspective that I was doing at 18 years old. And it was, I'm at 18 to 40, I was 45. It's not the same person, you know, but I didn't see this as a message from God. I saw this as a punishment from God. And I saw it as a punishment for God for maybe selfish reasons, but, it opened my eyes to a lot of different things, but initially it closed my eyes to things I should have been more receptive to.
So when you say you rejected it that it was a message from God.
I rejected it that it was a message from, I rejected that this was God doing this. And I'll be honest with you, I probably shouldn't say this.
Well, no, you're talking, I know where you're going.
I saw this as a punishment from God.
Yeah.
And I was super angry, Rob, because I look back and I say, you know, the things I'm proud of helped so many people, the teams we built, the patients we've helped, the communities we've impacted. And I've always believed I've done this from my heart and my desire to help people. I never did this. I won awards and you were at some of the awards I won. I don't care about any of that stuff. I really don't. I was proud of it because the awards represented helping people and things they needed help with. So my mentality was, all right, God, do this to people who don't do this. Do this to people who deserve to be punished. Not me. I'm helping people. I'm making this. I'm doing that. And my reaction was, God did this as a punishment to me. And damn it, he should have done it to fill in the blank. Because I don't deserve this crap. And that's literally how I took that for a period of time and until I opened my eyes. But
so what opened your eyes? That's what I want to hear. That's what I'd love for people to hear. What opened your eyes?
I think, so it's interesting. Being around my family, I've always been around my family and always care about my family. But I was never, even when I was around them, my brain was always somewhere else. My mind was always somewhere else. I love them. I care about them. And I still believe that all of the things I wanted to be and all the things I wanted to earn is because I wanted to create an example and I wanted to create opportunities and pots for them, right? Or, you know, reservations for them, whatever you want to call it. But I looked at my family differently. Interestingly, too, I look at them. I went as their father, as a figurehead to a relationship. And I know that sounds funky.
No, not at all, Brian. That's huge. Say that again. That's huge.
No, I'm not going to repeat that to you.
You went but from?
I've always looked at it as I'm supposed to be this figurehead. I'm supposed to be, throw something at me, man. I'll squash it. Bring something at me, man. I'll figure it out. Do all these things. I got it. You don't worry about it. And that's always been my mentality. I think my lesson learned from my relationship that I have with them now is, and I still have that, you know, once in a while, it's just who I am and I'm not making an excuse for it, but that's just who I am. But I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm just going to hug you. I can't believe I'm going to tell you this. I grew up not crying.
Yeah.
Not crying. It was a sign of cowardice and weakness. One time that I remember crying before recent was when one of my kids got diagnosed with something that was just devastating to me. That was the only time in my adult life I remember tearing up, literally. Even when my kids got hurt, there was those things, I'm going to take control. I'm going to get it done. Everybody's going to be fine. I got you right on my back. And that was that's just how I was wired. So being in this situation where I'm not the control, I'm not the figurehead, I'm a human being. I have emotions, I have successes, I have failures, I have blah, 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 blah. Just opened up to a different train of thinking for me. Again, not always something I loved or applauded, but it just opened up my eyes a little bit. But I grew up a Catholic. I grew up, you know, brainwashed. I know I'm not supposed to say that.
Uh-oh.
I'm only kidding. I grew up in the traditional mentality where you're supposed to go take this, do that. And I never subscribed to it. And being asked to see this as a message from God was impossible to me. It was just impossible because it wasn't logical. It made no sense. So all that stuff was floating through my head for a very, very long time.
So what's the perspective now?
I think, you know, I don't have a conclusion, honestly. I'm not at the point in my life where I have this, okay, this happened to me because I'm supposed to do this. I do believe that God did this. I do believe this is not a punishment. And I believe in God. Rob, I believe in God like there's no tomorrow. I'm not a super traditional faith follower. I'm not somebody who believes, all right, every sin, although when it works to my advantage, I used to, every sin I can take confession, you know. I'm just so critical of all that stuff. But having said that, at the core, I believe this happened to me to reposition things. And what do I mean by that? As I look forward, as I look where I am now, I always saw my family was behind me. They have my back, and I'm going to lead them into the promised land. And now I see them in front of me.
Wow, that's a huge statement. You saw them on your back, behind you, and now you see them in front of you.
Now I see them in front of me, and I want them to be my definition of success. Look, I still need to make money. I still need to do all that stuff, but I want them to be my definition of success. But in the past, I wanted to be that figurehead. Look to my dad. He can answer all these. He can solve all these problems. It fed into me and what wired my own definition of successes. So that kind of, you know, changed for me. So that was a perspective.
And so what is, when you see them in front of you now, what does that mean? As we we'll wrap this up in the next few minutes, but what does that mean?
I'm humble. I'm vulnerable. I don't have all the answers. I'm not going to solve all their problems. I'm not going to, you know, fund their errors. I'm not fill in the blank. They're their own person. But the ironic part about it, they're all strong enough to be that person.
And so that's the funny piece, right, Brian? Because you said they're all strong enough to be that person, but who led them down that road?
You know, I had an influence.
And you can say that. I wanted you to say that. I was trying to lead. That was a leading question.
And Marlene had an influence.
Of course. Both of you did. I understand
that. No, honestly, I'm not just saying that out of pressure. She's not here grading me, by the way. She's not even here. But I think they had a nice blend in their lives. Marlene comes from that caring culture mentality. And we're all about family. We're all about this. We're all about that. And I came from the different side of things. And it blended nicely. And I see that in my kids.
See it too from an outside perspective. I see it.
They took the good attributes from one and the good attributes from the other. Some of them inherited some of the bad ones, but you know what it is, whatever.
Well, most of the good ones came from Marlene. I know that.
But my point is, they're in front of me now, man, and they do that. But getting back to crying, I know I didn't finish that. And I got to. So I went my entire adult life crying once. Literally, ask Marlene, crying once. I never. The last 2 years, I swear to God, that's probably a wrong expression. Soon we're just talking about God. I've cried. I've let my feelings out, and I've let my I let my weaknesses out. We've had conversations where I actually expose weakness, and that is so foreign to me. And I still am not to the point in my life where I do that, and I feel, all right, this is normal. This is okay. I still walk out feeling much better than I would have. You know, 5 years ago, still feeling moments of weakness. Oh my God.
But Brian, what I think the message that we can convey to people, what you perceive as weakness is really a strength. And that's the way I perceive it. And we had a conversation in South Carolina. We were down there. Debbie and I were down there on that trip. And we had that conversation at that place. And I remembered that. And I think it's important that vulnerability, that transparency, those letting those feelings of emotion go. I think if people see that as a strength more than the weakness, they wrap their arms around it, that's a good thing.
I'm not arguing that at all. I'm 100% on board with that. All I'm saying is that's a journey for me.
And it's a journey for everybody.
I started in a negative zone. Again, my DNA is it's a weakness. It's a weakness. Don't you dare expose your weakness. You overcome, whether you feel vulnerable, you never share that.
Because but you've done it more so now, right?
Because people have agendas. They have agendas. They have intentions. They want to harm you. That's how my brain would function. Yeah. Now I don't believe that. And I believe I taught myself that to be in pursuit of what's next versus embrace what's now. And that's what's different about me today. I embrace things that are now, not in a perfect way. I still have vulnerabilities. I still have weaknesses, but I embrace it. I go to church every weekend. And other than lying to my mother when she used to drop me off at church until I went in, when I really went to the deli across the street, I go to church. I sing songs there, which I'm still convinced I miss my calling of being a rock star. But I sing songs there. I hold my wife's hands all church long for prayers. And honestly, Rob, if you would have said, how were you in church? I would have never done that ever.
Any I know you wouldn't. I know.
Ever. Because to me, it would have shown vulnerability, weakness, and I need somebody to help me like God. And that was my mindset.
So we're a couple more things here. While we're on the subject of music and favorites, I got to take this opportunity to expose a little bit of Brian.
No, you're going to lie. I know where you're going. It's a complete lie.
So his favorite song or favorite movie, either maybe one in both or one or the other, is High School Musical, everybody.
It's not my favorite. I like it.
Anytime I hear one of High School Musical songs, I got to send him a little. I send him a little text, and I send him the
Spotify. So you know why? Because when I was around my kids, they used to watch those shows, and I'm like, oh, and it got in my head. And I shouldn't admit this. I can't believe I am, but I have a workout routine, and in my songs, I have all those songs, and I listen to them as I'm working out and exercising. But I won't let it out. It's in my pocket. It's in my ears, and I won't let people hear it. And if I have it playing in my car as I'm going, because I crank the music, and I pull up to a stop sign, it goes down. I turn the volume down.
So just picture this 6'3", 220, 225 pound guy listening to High School Musical while he's in the gym. So that's pretty funny. Anyway, so look, I got to wrap it up here with this. So was this a humbling experience for you?
Oh, there's no other way to describe it.
So would you agree with me that humbling experience has been part of the, because this is the Chiseled podcast, that humbling experience has been part of the chiseling away at Brian White to become more of who she's supposed to be?
Yeah, and yes, and it ain't done.
Well, then you knocked out my next question. Is it done yet? And the answer is no.
It ain't done, Rob. If there's anything back in me that I hope never leaves, I do want to change the world, and I want to impact it. I want to influence it, and I want to do it in the right way, and I want to do it for people. And one of the things I'm most proud of, and you didn't ask me this, but I'm going to offer this, and it's so simplistic, and it's maybe, you know, not something you can measure, but one of the things I'm so proud of, I went through this moment in my life where we described, I was super sick, and I stepped down as the CEO of a health system, and I was focused on all these other things. The amount of people, including you and others, that reached out to me with no agenda, to tell me to say two things: how are you doing, and we care a lot about you. That to me sent a very powerful message that, number one, these are people that you've bonded with, and I'm talking friends and doctors and nurses and community members and people outside of the professional side that I have relationships with, but including them, they all reached out from decades of work. I had people reaching out to me when I worked in Syracuse. I had people working out to me when I worked in New Jersey, in Maryland, in South Carolina, you name it. That to me had an overwhelming impact. It made me feel good. It made me feel good because they cared about me as much as I cared about them. And they didn't have an agenda to care about me. They didn't care about me because I was their boss or any of this stuff, maybe a little bit, but they didn't care about me for those reasons, because they want to make sure they get a raise because I wasn't their boss anymore. And I hadn't worked with some of these people in 15 years. They cared about me because they think I'm a good person. They cared about me because they care about my health and my well-being and my family. And that honestly brought tears and smiles to my face every single time. And that is what my now definition of success has been, professionally and personally, is that the relationships that we formed over the years are not time sensitive. They're forever. And it, it was awesome, man. It was really awesome.
Well, it's so refreshing to hear. And Bri, you said a couple things earlier. You want to change the world. You want to help people be better. And you like connections. Well, I think today's podcast, I do believe it's going to help a lot of people. I think it's going to make an impact. And the fact that you like the connection piece, you like helping other people's connect. But because you helped other people connect, when you got sick, those people connected back with you. And that's powerful. That is so powerful. And that, you know, it's been refreshing to hear. It's been refreshing to bust each other's chops here on the podcast a little bit.
Oh, no, whoever's listening, I was the victim here. You took advantage of me.
But Brian knows, I don't know if I've ever said this, but I love you, pal. I love you, pal. I appreciate you. Your family is great. I'm so glad that we met years ago. I don't know if you want to share away. If anybody wanted to talk about this stuff, do you want people to reach out to you or now?
Absolutely. Again, it's all about helping one another, whatever that is. And I might not be the best subject matter expert, but I don't care. I'll listen and I'll help anybody I can.
And how can
I
get? And
I would also hope that I could do the same.
Oh, yeah.
Help to others. Yeah.
So how could they get a hold of you, Brian?
They can't. I just said that. They can email me. I'll give you stuff to post. But, you know, my personal email is the best way to do it because I'm always on. I was never on it for years. I'm always on my personal email.
And what is that email, Brian?
JBME, Jake Brady Marley Ella, White at gmail.com.
Well, Brian, again, thanks for being on here today. It's been refreshing. It's been fun. Had a great time with you. And I thank you for sharing everything you want to share. You shared with us. And do you have any final words before we let you go?
Well, that's a lot of pressure. Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Jimmy Valvano. Love it. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. And until next time, let's go get chiseled.
You just got chiseled with Rob Pomodoro. Be sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than You Think.